following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone, and today on the program, we've got another friend of the Brett Boone Podcast. He's an MLB Network analyst. He's got a podcast of his own, The Mayor's Office. He's a teammate of mine, former teammate. He's a three-time All-Star. He is the mayor. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Sean Casey. Sean, thanks for coming on, man.
What's up, Booney? Great to be on, man. Again, don't forget, I'm coming in. I'm a friend of the programs.
Right. You said it at the top, a friend of the program. Hey, I want to, I think we didn't get this in the last time you were on because I think it was pre-Yankees for you.
Yeah.
So a year ago, let me catch the Brett Boone podcast on. Catch him up on Sean. Sean's been doing MLB Network for a long time, like I said, his podcast. But last year, he was asked to step in to the Yankees organization second half as a hitting coach. And how was that? How was that for you? You've been in the media a long time. Now, all of a sudden, and you're not, it's not like you're just stepping into a double-A job or you know, and not to demean, but you're not stepping into the Kansas City Royals clubhouse. Right. You're, you know, all the focus is on you, the Big Apple, probably the biggest sports franchise in the world.
Yeah, it was Booney. It was awesome, man. It was really an incredible experience. I got a chance to see you and your dad when I first took the job in Anaheim.
That was like the first couple days.
Yeah, and I'm like, you were the best, dude. You're like just such a great guy, man. I remember you giving me advice being like, hey, man, just do your thing. You know, stay positive. You know, you can't hit for these guys, but you can give them advice. It was just such a good conversation. Seeing your dad was great, too. But, dude, your brother's like – one of my best friends. I love the guy so much. And when he had called me and asked me to do it, he'd asked me to do it a couple times. And I wasn't ready to do it just because, you know, I had a lot of kids at home still. And then when he had called me last year saying, you know, it would be for a couple months in the second half. And I did think about doing it, going and doing it again this year. But, you know, I still have a daughter that's 14 at home, and I really enjoy my time with her. And I had another daughter that was a senior too. But, Booney, I had the best time, dude. I was so grateful for that time. You know, especially when you have a guy like Aaron Judge that you get a chance to coach every single day, like, you know, you're putting these hitters meetings together, and there's Judgey, and there's Giancarlo Stanton, and there's Anthony Rizzo, and there's Anthony Volpe, and, you know, down the list it goes, you know, DJ LeMahieu. It was literally such an honor to put on the pinstripes too, and also to be with your brother, man. To be with your brother, watch him, you know, work the way that he does, watch the, you know, the how much pressure. I don't know if it's pressure, but yeah, pressure and also just responsibility that Aaron has on him is incredible. And the way he handles it, you know, his personality is perfect for New York. And I just, you know, Carlos Mendoza was the bench coach at the time, now the manager for the Mets. So that whole staff, Matt Blake and all those guys, Chapman and Rojas, just great people. So I had an incredible experience, dude. I am so beyond grateful, like heart-centered gratitude for having that opportunity.
And it's pretty cool. And you know, I want to get into it a little bit about the hitting instructor part. It is a tough gig. I mean, I don't know how many hitting instructors you had throughout your career, but starting in the minor leagues, you know, you got hitting instructors in the minor leagues, then you get to the big leagues, you play for different affiliates, different franchises. So you're always having different hitting instructors. I laugh at fans when teams don't hit. Oh, fire the hitting coach. And I just want to tell him, you know, it's so not like that. A hitting coach is, yeah, the physical, some are on the same page. with you. Some have great insights from a mental capacity, which for me in my journey, the best hitting coaches I had were the guys that could walk by me, Sean, and just have a little piece of information, not overwhelm me, but just kind of get me thinking about something that would take me from a struggling, I'm not seeing the ball well, to, oh, wait a minute, that's a good point. I've got hope for that next at bat. Those were the most valuable guys for me. And then a few guys from the physical could actually put themselves into my stance, but that was very rare. It was, I tell the story all the time. I had Paul Molitor one year as a hitting coach. Now, Paulie, I believe it was 2004. Paul's one of my favorite players. When I first was coming into the league, Paulie was a veteran. I spent a lot of time with him in the union meetings. He was the leader of our union, in the American League. I just had a lot of respect for him. It's right around when he went into the Hall of Fame. And if you know Paul Molitor, that man could get a hit. And and he was my hit instructor 04. And I remember
No load too, Boney, right? I mean, he hit so different, right? He just bam.
Yeah. He loaded with his front foot. That was his load. Wow. So we're sitting there at the end of the year, Case, and I 03, I had a big year. 04, I had a decent year, but definitely fell short of 03. And I remember the last week of the season, we're not going to the postseason. We're just grinding out that last week. And Paulie looks at me and he says, Booney, when I played, he said, I could get a hit. I said, yeah, Paulie, I know. You got over 3,000 of them. He goes, the problem is I can't help you get a hit. And that sums it up. A guy, one of the great right-handed hitters of our generation, a wonderful guy that I fully respected. And we just were water and oil when it came to teaching hitting. It's not that easy. It's not just, oh, you're a great hitter, so you're a great hitting instructor. Some are never got out of A ball and have the ability to teach. It's just not that easy. And the bottom line, especially at the big league level, once you have all these meetings and those T drills and flip under the rafters, as soon as you leave that on deck circle, there's no hitting instructor. It's you and the pitcher.
Yeah. I love that, dude. I feel the same way. Like I would tell the guys, my big message in the meetings was, hey, listen, at the end of the day, it's you versus you. Whatever information you have, however much you need or however little that you need, is all on you. Like, you really got to know yourself, because when you leave that on deck circle, you leave that dugout, I can't help you. Booney can't help you. Your mom and dad can't help you. Your brothers can't help you. No one can help you but you and your thoughts and the work that you've put in when you get into that batter's box. And like, I think just like Paul Molitor said, like, I feel like I was a pretty good hitter in the big leagues, but I can't help you get a hit. Like, you're the only one that can do that. And it really becomes that you versus you, you know, mentality. And I feel the same way. Like, my best hitting instructors, and I tried to take this mentality into the game, when I went back last year with the Yankees, was, you know, I got to get to know what makes these guys work. They're big league hitters, you know? And so I was big on, like, what are one or two things that when you're going well that you're doing, and what are one or two things when you're going bad, usually it's because of this. You know, I know for me, it was like, okay, if I was rushed, if I had any anxiety sitting on me and I was really rushed hitting, I was really in trouble. If I didn't set my sights to left center as a left-handed hitter, and I was really getting pool happy, I knew that's when I got into trouble. Those were my keys. And also, and then the one technique was, you know, the one mechanic was my hands, you know, make sure my hands were getting loaded where they could get in the path. And then, you know, I think it was Dave Maggin in Boston when I was in 08 was the guy that really got me into that. I just loved the way he did it, but it was simple. And anything he could say slightly, hey, Case, you said when you're going well, you're really getting your hands going and you're relaxed. Are you doing that right now? And I'd be like, man, I'm not. You know, sometimes you can't see it yourself. So I'm with you, Booney. Like, for me, I think at the big league level, less is more. Like, I'm not going to tell Aaron Judge how to be a better hitter. I mean, the guy's the best hitter on the planet, but I can be with Aaron Judge during his work. I can, you know, make sure that he's getting the feels that he's, you know, that he says he, you know, he really likes to get when he's going well, getting that foot up and being slow. So you can have those conversations, but getting to know guys at the big league level, I think, is an important part of being a hitting coach, because you don't want to just make stuff up and be like, hey, try what I did. Like, that doesn't work.
Right. Without a doubt. This is a question I've always had, and I've talked to Aaron about it. Did you find it a challenge being a hitting instructor, being left-handed? I'll give you an example. Johnny Olerud, one of my favorite teammates I've ever had. He was my first baseman for years in Seattle, and we'd talk hitting. You know, most of my hitting, it was Edgar and myself. We'd talk strategy, and we were both right-handed. We were both in the middle of the line. They were probably going to pitch us similar, each team that came to town. So we had a lot in common. I'd talk hitting with Johnny Olerud, and we sometimes we'd come to an impasse. I'd be like, Johnny, I just don't know what it's like being left-handed. You know, and I always used to try to flip it around, Sean, because being a lefty, probably about 80% of the time, unless it's late in the game, lefty on lefty matchup, you're facing a right-handed hitter. I know, or pitcher. I know as a righty, when the days that I had to face a lefty starter, my approach was different. I could get away with more. I could maybe close my front foot a little bit more, hang out over the plate a little more, and kind of look for the ball away, because nothing was going away from me, if that makes sense. I didn't have that John Smoltz slider that I had to worry chasing off the plate. Everything was coming into me. So against lefties, I had a different approach and a different thought process than I did against a righty. Does that become an obstacle for you when you're talking to Aaron Judge? Do you think, okay, I got to put myself in his shoes, because I got this guy today. I got DeGrom pitching today. He's throwing a 92-mile-an-hour slider going away from him. So it's almost like you got to put yourself in, okay, when you faced Randy Johnson, all right, what is my thought process there? Explain that to me. I've always been curious of it, being a left-handed hitter and relating to right-handed hitters.
It's so true, because I felt the same way. Against a righty, I felt like I could push him out a little more. I could even take a shot. You know, if I get count leverage, I could even take that shot middle in, you know what I mean? Something I could juice. But, you know, when I faced a lefty, I had to respect that slider so much that, like, it was tough to, like, that ball in. I really, what I found, Booney, when I faced lefty on lefty, I found that pitch in was not, it became kryptonite to me, especially a guy that could sink it and had a slider away. So I would really have to push my vision out to really respect that left-handed slider. So I understood what, you know, we had mostly a righty lineup last year. I remember we faced Sandy Alcantara in Miami, and he was sinker slider. I mean, nasty 98-mile-an-hour sinker, wipeout 92-mile-an-hour slider. And I think he two-hit us, a complete game two-hitter. And I just remember thinking, yeah, like, the biggest thing as a coach, I would have to put myself in that position of, what did I feel like when I faced lefties? And I was like, I got to push these guys out. Push them up, push them up, push them out. Get out over the plate. Like, hunt that area. You know, look for the fastball and react to anything else. But, like, push them up, push them out. Like, don't let them get tight in on you, because that's where, you know, that's really a kryptonite for most of us hitters, is that ball that's, you know, in on your hands and up. So I was real big on, like, when on the righty mentality, when we're facing righties, especially with a guy that had a good two seamer, man, push this guy up, push this guy out.
I just got back. I went to a Braves alumni weekend. We had it it's been probably 2 or 3 weeks now. But I got to catch up with an old hitting instructor of mine. His name's Gerald Perry. I'm sure you remember him.
Yes.
I had him in the early 2000s in Seattle. And Gerald was a piece of work. He was a different personality. Sean, I loved him, and here's why. And I want to see if you've seen this in your travels or tried to implement it as a hitting coach. The thing that was great about Gerald, it wasn't the physical. He had no clue to talk to me about. You know, I'd say, Gerald, what's that look like? Yeah, just like that. He was one of those. But I'll tell you what he was, and I told him how much I appreciated him this alumni weekend. I said, Gerald, and I had a serious moment with him. I said, I just want to tell you how much I appreciated your early 2000s days in Seattle as a hitting instructor. And he thought I was going to say something sarcastic because I am Boone. Well, and he thought, oh, here comes something. And I said, no, I'm being honest with you. I said, he had an uncanny ability, Sean, to when I was down and out, when I wasn't feeling it, it was obvious. You know, when you'd look at me, how you feeling, Boone? How do you think I'm feeling? You've been watching my last five at bats? One of those situations. But I'll tell you, it could be as simple as something in the first inning. I come up with nobody on, not a situation. I take a fastball away and I get a clean base hit through the right side. Just a nice piece of hit, nothing fancy. Didn't hit a homer, didn't drive anybody in. The inning ends. I go out and play defense. Let's say it's a long first inning. We got a pitching coach comes out. It's just one of those innings where it's 25 minutes till we get back in the dugout. And every time I'd come back in the dugout, he'd be on the top step. And he'd be like, Boone, way to swing it last inning. And I'd go, I thought everybody in the stadium had forgotten that little measly base hit I got, but my hitting coach didn't forget. That was important to me. It put me in a different mindset, like, hell yeah, and I can't wait for my next at-bat. He'd come to me, Sean, mid-game when I wasn't getting anything done. I might have punched out and popped up to the catcher, and he had an ability to sit down next to me and say, Boone, I'll tell you what, I know it hasn't gone good this game so far, but I got a feeling, man, you're going to come up late in the game in a big situation. I'll tell you, you're going to win the game for us. And I'd look at him like, come on, don't be blowing smoke. But I'll tell you, more times than not, those particular early years in Seattle, it'd get to the eighth inning, and it'd be a two-run game. And I'd be in the hole and somebody get on base. And all of a sudden in my mind, it was like a movie. I'm like, Gerald told me this was going to happen, you know, and I had that extra little bit of confidence and I really appreciate it. I think he really did me a service, a genuinely good service. He made me a better hitter by little stupid, goofy things. Like I just told you those stories, but those are important.
Well, how important is that, man? That's a great story, dude. And that's what it is. Like, you're looking for somebody that you know's watching. You're looking for somebody that's got your back or can give you something, a positive feedback. Because this game is so negative. I mean, it breeds negativity. I mean, you're failing 7 out of 10 times nowadays. You're failing 8 out of 10 times. And, you know, 80% of the time, 70% of the time, like, you're looking for somebody or somebody that's got your back. I felt that way as a coach too, Boone. I felt like it was my job. I don't know. This is just me. I felt like it was my job to be on that top step every time somebody was hitting and I'm cheering on every pitch. That's, you know, a good take right there or whatever it was. And then always looking for something like, oh man, like even if he had a couple, you know, a Volpe or something 0-for-3 on that fourth at bat, I'd sit with him in the dugout. Hey man, you're close. You look good. You know, slow down a little bit, whatever it was I needed to, you know, throw out there. But there's something to be said about that, man. It really is. I mean, you need those kind of guys over that 162 grind that, you know, especially a guy like a hitting coach, like a Gerald Perry, that, you know, like he's watching. So when you get in that box, you know, I know there's at least one guy in that dugout that really cares about me. And dude, that's the difference between you coming up with a hit late in the game in the eighth or ninth inning to win the game, or just, you know, throwing in an 0-for-4 with another punch out.
Yeah, it really was. It really, and like I said, it sounds goofy, it sounds hokey, but I appreciated that because anybody's there. Yeah, when you get the game-winning knock or you're 3-for-4 with a 3-run homer, of course everybody notices and everybody's, you know, everybody wants you to do all the interviews. But that little measly single in the first, when it goes notice, especially with the guy that you're grinding in that cage every day, man, it goes a long way. And I was just interested you being in that position if those scenarios ever came up. All right. We were teammates for a millisecond in Cincinnati. You were longtime teammates with my brother Aaron, and you got to play for Bob Boone.
Yeah.
Without ever being in a professional situation with Aaron on the coaching side, I try to guess. People ask me what, you know, you and Aaron, how I said, well, we're kind of oil and water. We're different. We, a lot of our thoughts and our baseball, you know, beliefs are pretty similar. We differ on things. We like to debate. I said, but as far as personalities, Aaron and myself, we're different. We get along great, but we're just different people. And I've always thought, without, you know, don't know what it's like being a player or a coach on his staff, but I've always likened him to my dad. They're very similar.
They're starting to look alike too, bro. Booty, you're starting to look like Bob. What the hell?
Yeah. But they butted heads as manager, player. Dad and myself, we got along great. We got along great in a professional atmosphere. Seems like Aaron and Dad were always kind of butting heads. But I think the passion they have, because I tell Aaron sometimes when you get up in that rat race in New York, I said, Aaron, once in a while, dude, just show up to the yard at 4 p.m. Don't be so prepared. I said, do you realize that there's only so much you can do as a manager? Once they take the field, man, it's kind of out of your hands. Yeah, you can bring the lefty in. You can bring the righty in. You can have your game program ready to go for if they do this, we'll do that. I said, but it's up to these players, man. And there's only so much you can do. So let's not pull our hair out with, oh, should I hit him at this part of the lineup? At the end of the day, the players are going to play and it's not going to matter that much. You need to relax. But that was my dad's thing. He cared so much and he's at the yard at 12 and he's running lineups back and forth. I said, sometimes you got to Lou Piniella it, man. Just show up at 7:04 with your hair disheveled and say, Booney, what do we got today? I said, Skip, sit down in that seat. We got you handled. If this guy's pitching like I just saw on the tape, we're going to kick the shit out of him. Playing for my dad, being the hitting coach under Aaron. Am I right? Are there similarities or are they different?
Bro, there's so many similarities. So many similarities. And they're obviously different too, because obviously your brother's different than your dad. They do look alike, which I find awesome. And dude, the one thing about your dad, being around your dad, I honestly at times it's like, God, this guy's brain works so different than mine. Like he sees the game at a different level. I felt like your dad, it was like one of the most impressive baseball people I've ever been around with, like, you know, the way he thought about things. But do I think at times you can, I think even look going back to Cincinnati, we had so many bunt plays. We had I think we had 7 bunt plays. But your dad was right. He's like, if this situation happens, you know, we're going to have the second baseman charge in. And, you know, it was just like, you know, things were, you know what I'm saying, Booney? Like things were like, he had some things like, that makes sense. I've never seen this before because I'm just used to like regular, you know, wheel or whatever. And your dad came up with things. I'm like, wow, I think your dad was ahead of his time as far as like what they're doing now. I believe your dad was doing 20 some years ago. Like he was more prepared than any manager had ever been around. And I think your brother, like I talked to your brother the other day. I'm like, what are you doing, bro? It was noon. He's like, I'm pulling into the yard. I was like, it's noon. He's like, yeah, we're getting ready. You know what I mean? So Aaron is so prepared, you know, and nowadays, Booney, like that's one thing I noticed, like, the game's changed as far as like the responsibilities of everybody. Like your brother's got so much on his plate, and he knows about the hitters meetings, the Matt Blake and those and Mike Harkey are in there for the bullpen meetings every day. They're in his office going, hey, about this matchup, that matchup. So like he's so prepared. I'm sure Brad Ausmus is right there with him. But dude, the one thing I loved about your brother and that I was very proud of, like being with him in that clubhouse and in the dugout was, you know, just the way he handles everybody, dude. Like those players love him. You know, I really believe the media, you know, they come down on your brother a lot, but he has such a way of kind of deflecting things and keeping things positive. And I think a lot of times, you know, the media or fans want your brother to be a little more negative, a little more edge about him. Like not everybody's doing well, but you and I know at the end of the day, if you say anything about a player out there in public, that's, you know, it's gonna, you could lose those players. So I think your brother does a great job of towing that line, but also he'll call guys in his office if he feels like they're not playing up to their capabilities or they're not getting the results that the team needs at the time. And he'll air them out or he'll let them know, you know, that things got to change. So I respected it on so many fronts, what he has to do. There's a ton of similarities between your dad and him. And I think one of the biggest ones is they both really know the game of baseball. And I think for you and your brother and Matt and you know, growing up, with your dad, your grandfather Ray being in the big leagues, and then your dad playing all those years, and you guys grew up in the clubhouse. I honestly think that, you know, that you guys have maybe a little tick different too about how you see the game. I think it's pretty impressive how the Boones see baseball.
And that's the one thing about Aaron too. And I joke a lot and I tease him. And like I said, we debate. I mean, we don't see eye to eye on everything, but the one thing Aaron Boone is, when you get, that's a genuine man right there. That guy really cares. And when I see him go off on his tangents and not that I would handle it the way Aaron does, but he gets kicked out of the game. I said, but people don't, you know, when they ask me, oh, Aaron's getting thrown out of a lot of games. I said, you don't understand, Aaron. I said, Aaron in his brain's going, okay, I don't want to show anybody up. I don't want to make anybody look bad, but I need to talk to this umpire right now about this. And I'm going to go out there. He goes out there with the best intentions. And when he just has his little tirades on occasion, I'll tell you what, they're not premeditated. That's Aaron Boone. That's Aaron Boone when he's 8 years old, tagging along with me and my buddies. And he just hit a ball that's a home run in a wiffle ball game. But as his big brother, I tell him it's foul just to get a reaction out of him. That's Aaron Boone. And I see him out there arguing with umpires. That's how he used to argue with me when I'd be teasing him. So I'll tell you, Sean, as much as I tease and we talk about Aaron, and a part of it now is you know, Aaron is the manager of the Yankees. So I'm going to be asked questions about that. I'm really proud of him. I think he's done a great job. And when people question, I said, no. That's Aaron Boone. That's genuine. He loves his guys. He will back his guys to the death. And it doesn't mean I still can't tease him, but yeah. I really am proud of him. He's doing a great job.
Boone, you know, too, like, your brother is so funny. He's so opinionated, too. Like, if he feels like anybody's wronged or that, like, that's not true, you know what I mean? If he's like, you know, he gets bothered by that. He's going to call. Like, even I'm on MLB Network now, and, like, the other night, Adnan Virk says something like RBIs, and your brother is texting me, hey, tell Adnan it's not RBI, it's RBIs. You know what I mean? And he's watching everything. He's on everything. But it was so funny, Boone, because I always knew your brother. You know, he gets stirred up in the, you know, if the ump's calling something he didn't feel was right, you know, he's stirred in the first inning, and I would grab Carlos Mendoza. I'm like, dude, what inning is Boone gone this game? You know, usually I'd be right, because I know he'd be stirred in the first and it would get him going. But you're right. He's not looking to get thrown out of games. He's just very passionate about fighting for his players, making sure guys are doing their job right. Does he go overboard sometimes? Probably. But that's your brother, dude. That's exactly who he is. And I don't fault him at all for it. And I'm glad that he is who he is.
You mentioned MLB Network, and you've been – you know, there for a long time.
Yeah, 16 years, dude.
Was it weird for you? Like, you need to, when you're on the set and you're doing a segment, sometimes you have to be critical of a situation, a manager, a team, a player. Now, all of a sudden, you're in the dugout with the Yankees. You're watching MLB Network, and maybe they're going to critique you, your players, your team. Was that a little bit weird for you?
Yeah, it really was. It really was. You know, you watch the network, and when you're in the dugout, because a lot of times when you're at the network, you don't have the heartbeat of the club. You're not in that clubhouse. You don't know why Boone didn't put a guy into pitch. You don't know why so-and-so is not in the lineup or whatever. And it could be something that's not even, you know, baseball related. It could be something off the field. So, you know, one thing when you're in the dugout, you definitely feel more like a Papa Bear. Like, no, these are my guys. And, like, you don't want to hear stuff, anything negative, you know, about your guys. But, you know, I think I was glad that I've had the experience at MLB Network for the 16 years I've been there, because in that industry, you're forced to know what the numbers are. You're forced to know how the games run now, you know, especially with Brian Kenny, like on the MLB Now show, and he goes deep in the numbers. So I feel like that helped me a lot in the clubhouse, and like putting together reports, putting together the hitters meetings. I felt like I understood the numbers and all that stuff. But yeah, definitely being in the fight, in the dugout, in the games with those guys is a different atmosphere and a different feeling than when you're on TV.
That's a good point too, because our generation, we were different from a numbers perspective. We talked, the verbiage was a little different than it is now. You know, I've got a son playing in the minor leagues, and he'll break out terms to me that I'll be like, well, that's a new term. Well, yeah, Brett, or yeah, Dad, we get it from here. And it's the all these things that measure swing and velocity and angles. We didn't have any of that. So I'm still learning today as a dad going, okay, well, that's a new term I use today. But you're right. You've got to be, when you go into that clubhouse, you go into that dugout, you've got to be Sean Casey, the big league player that was a 300 career hitter. But at the same time, it's a different time, and the guys are different. They train different. Their verbiage is different. So it's important that you can be, oh, here's this old guy. No, I'm the old guy that's got a lot of experience, but right. I can relate to the new generation as well.
You got to be able to speak the language, man. They know if you can't speak the language, or like, if you were just saying, get the bat head out, like sometimes, you know, we were coming, hey, get the bat head out, like see it, see the ball, get up, get down on the ball, whatever it was that our verbiage was. These guys want to know vertical break. They want to know horizontal break. They want to know, hey man, this reliever coming in, you know, what's he percentage wise slider, first pitch to a righty. You know, you got to have it all ready for him. And another thing, Booney, they got the iPads in the dugout now. So as soon as, you know, this is one thing as the hitting coach, I had to kind of figure out. Brad Wilkerson, Casey Dykes helped me out a lot, but like those relievers are coming in. You got to get the iPads going. So I got, oh, hey, who's warming up? Who's okay? Hey, Foley's warming up for the time. Bam, you got to get to the iPad. It's Foley. Oh, yeah. Now I got to pull up Foley on 5 iPads. And then I got to, hey, here comes the next 3 hitters that are going to face this guy. Stanton wants to know vertical horizontal break. I got, oh, hey, bro, he's a 22 break. He's a 21 break. And then I'm like, and here's the iPad. Hey, check this out. And then bam, here's five. Okay, bam. And then they're off and going. Everyone's doing that. So like, that was something I was like, I this is incredible. I don't even know how to use the iPad. That was one thing. Right. So I had to figure all that. So that's happening in real time in the game in the 7th or 8th. I was more stressed about, you know, looking at the monitor. Hey, who's up in the pen? We got this guy. Okay, get the sheet out for these guys. And get the iPads ready to open.
I'll tell you what, that's the one thing about that I'm envious about this generation. Man, if I could just live on that iPad, because I was a big video guy, Case. I loved, just get me his last outing. If you've got it, the last time I faced him. But we didn't have the technology wasn't there yet for us to have that whole bullpen. But man, if I could, you know, sometimes you got in 1998, you got a guy coming out of the bullpen. You remember him, you know, you faced him maybe a couple times, depending on how much time you've had in the league. But you don't have that in-depth, that analysis, that video. And I loved, just get me as much video as I can so I can watch. So I have a clue how, when I'm going into the game, I already got my plan down. Now, the only thing that's going to change my plan is the game and the score. What inning is it? Who's hitting in front of me? Who's hitting behind me? All these things factor into how I'm going to approach each and every at bat. But I'm envious of these guys today. They got video on every reliever. I would sit in my room the night before a series and I'd watch video for 2 hours. Now I could go out and relax for 3 days. I got it. It's all right here. It's pretty awesome what they have now from a technological standpoint.
Dude, that it's another level, man. It's another level. And I agree, man. I wish I had some of the stuff that they have. I do think though, Booney, that I do think with the new verbiage comes more information, and more information, I think sometimes as a baseball player, especially a hitter, I don't know how great information is if you're trying to use it during the at-bat as far as like, I just think it's tough enough to see it and hit it. And I think that's one thing with hitters nowadays. I think sometimes these guys are overthinking it as opposed to, dude, at the end of the day, you're playing wiffle ball in the backyard. When Brett Boone was throwing you a wiffle ball when you were 12 and that thing was moving like this, you didn't know what angle, break, horizontal, this and that. You saw it and hammered it, right? You saw it and hammered it. So there's still something to that as far as like being able to slow the game down, get your vision where you want it, hunt a zone, hit with intention. Like that has nothing to do with any analytics.
Right. And simplifying the process, because it is hard. Too much information in the wrong hands can be a detriment, I found. But it's finding the sweet spot for you as an individual, for you as a hitter. How much is too much? Right. And that's trial and error. I think that's tinkering with things. Hey, I'm best when I have this amount of information and I go into the game with this in hand. And that can change on the fly. But yeah. I think we need to know ourselves. And some guys can handle a lot more information. And it's a positive for them. them. Some guys, you give them too much information, it gets too much going on up here. So I think it's an individual case.
I didn't like it. Did you like tips? Like people be like, oh, you know, I remember Brandon Inge was great in the Tiger bullpen, dugout, and then Eduardo Perez too. And they'd be like,
hey, Eduardo was great.
Yeah, Eduardo was great. Hey, Case, I got something. And I'd say, I don't want it. I don't want it because I want to trust my eyes. And I always thought, like, if I'm facing John Smoltz and you have a tip on his slider, or maybe Smoltz was different because he was so nasty, but if you had a tip on somebody's slider,
right,
and he throws it to me and my eyes are like, slider, yes, and it's a nasty slider, I'm not hitting it anyhow. So, like, I was big on trusting my eyes. Did you like the tips? Were you a guess guy? Or you mostly off the fastball? You know, did you like to know what was coming if guys had a tip?
To me, it was completely who was the pitcher? How did I see the ball off that pitcher? Who's giving me the tip was my biggest thing. Now, if I have a Mark McElmore come to me who was really good at it, an Eduardo Perez, a guy that I trust 100%, and they said, hey, if I got the signs, do you want them if I'm out there? First of all, the guy's going to be on second base. So it's a runner in scoring position. It could be second and third. It could be a sac fly situation. If I trusted the guy, yes, I did want it. Because I had the ability, because a lot of times if I had like a Smoltz's going to feel good. We're using him as an example a lot. By the way, he's coming on next week, so he'll be checking it out. A guy like that for me, Case, that I had trouble picking up his slider. Yes, I wanted it. Guys like that, number ones, you know, a Pedro would come to town, a Randy Johnson, where he's throwing 100, he's got that slider. I'm not going to hit both. And when I say hit, I don't mean touch. Of course, I can touch the ball. I'm talking about do some damage with. So I'm not going to sit on Randy's fastball and hit his sliders into the seats. Right. I'm going to get one or the other. I'm going to face Trevor Hoffman. I'm either going to get his changeup or his fastball, but I'm not going to get both. So I would pick one. So yes, for me individually, I understand completely where you're coming from, because some guys I played with, some great hitters, they didn't want to know. But when I had a runner in scoring position, if I 100% trusted the source, and that's key for me, absolutely, I wanted the pitch.
Mm. I like that. You're right. You're right. Trust the source too. I've had guys say, "Hey, got this," and I've there's been times I'm like, I'm struggling. I'm like, all right, I'll take it. Then I get up there, I was like, this guy's not. That's wrong. He's not. You know, he's
exactly. Like, hey,
when he gets his finger off his glove, it's a heater. I'm like, guy comes up with his finger off his glove. I'm like, oh yeah, heater.
Right.
Like a changeup. I'm like, dude, you're wrong. You don't have the size.
It was more of mine too, Case, when you're at second base and they had figured out the formula, the fingers the catchers were putting down. Those are the ones I really trusted, the guy out there at second base. And by the way, they tell me it's the second sign after whatever the formula was, they tell me. And now I got out there. And that one thing I didn't trust myself. I'm like, oh, if I give Johnny Olerud slider and it's a fastball, he's going to want to kill me. So I didn't trust myself. It's not that I didn't trust them. I didn't trust myself giving it. So I was always like out there in second base. I was the worst, Case. I was nervous and I'm going, oh, am I being obvious? Is the second baseman catching me? I'm going to wear one in the neck next at bat. And meantime, I got to get the right sign because this is an RBI situation. So, yeah, right. I was horrible at it. I was good at getting it.
So good.
Couple more questions on the Yankees. Being in the dugout, would you ever want to manage? Or is that something
you
never think about?
Yes. You know what? Yes, I would want to manage. I think being back in the dugout – and being with your brother, seeing how your brother, you know, went about his business, I do think I might want to manage one day. I think it's my daughter's a freshman right now, and so in a couple of years when she goes to college, I have all my kids in college. I am thinking about, you know, having it. I would love to have an opportunity to manage one day.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one Yankee question.
Yeah,
it's something recent. I won't say what came out of it. I had a little discussion with Aaron yesterday about it. It's the fourth inning, I believe, the other day. Everybody knows it's kind of documented. Devers owns Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
It's fourth inning, not a situation, one out. Nobody's on base, and Gerrit Cole puts him on first. I'm sitting there. I can't believe. I'm like, is this real? I understand he owns you. Yeah. Sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. You're the Cy Young Award winner. It's not a situation. I understand if it's the eighth and there's a base open. Yeah, I'm going to take my chance with the next guy because Devers has got my number. He sees my pitches. Well, he just put him on. And it kind of blew me away. And I thought, as a teammate, what am I thinking? If my ace, my big boy, my guy that's going to be there, I want in game seven, putting him on in the fourth, I don't know. I had some mixed feelings on it. What are your thoughts? And you know Garrett.
Well, yeah, well, first, and Devers wasn't swinging the bat well. And you know what that's like. I don't care how
Good you are. Getting a hit in the big leagues is hard off a machine.
That's what I'm saying. And also,
what are we doing?
And when you're struggling, I don't care if it's a guy you've owned your whole career, you don't feel good. So, it's different when you feel good and then you got a guy you own, you're going to own him. But when you don't feel good, I don't care if it's my 14-year-old daughter throwing balls up there. I don't know. Something's not right. So I think that had to be factored in, which wasn't. I think one thing with Garrett is that he's the most prepared pitcher I've ever seen, really. I mean, the way he prepares for a game, the way he breaks down the lineup, him and Justin Verlander are two of the most prepared. Josh Beckett, some great pitchers, but Garrett was top of the line. And I just think it was a situation where he overthought it. He overprepared. He was like, you know what? Devers is the one guy that's not going to beat me, even if it's a situation like that. He obviously said after the game, I made a mistake. That was not the right call. Then they end up getting to him. I think it was the next inning or that inning or the next inning. I really believe he just made a mistake. I think he overprepared. I think he overthought it. He overthought it and just got himself spinning and didn't want to face Devers in that situation. So I give him a pass because, like I said, Booney, dude, there's not many guys I've seen prepare the way Garrett Cole prepares for his starts.
And Devers, for me, if I'm Devers, it's like, yeah, I'm not feeling that good. I haven't been swinging. But
thank you.
One of the greatest pitchers on the planet is not only scared of me, he's absolutely terrorized by me. And I think later in the game, he got a knock with the bases loaded. So
yeah, he did.
Yeah, that was interesting to me. All right. We've seen one this year, one firing in Seattle. Scott Service got let go. 3 or 4 weeks ago, Dan Wilson's taken over. They're playing better, still not looking good as far as that playoff spot for the Mariners. From what you're seeing going into the offseason, AL and NL managers you think potentially could be on the hot seat?
Oh, could potentially be on the hot seat. That's a good question. Well, obviously, are you surprised that Service got fired?
I'm not. Here's my thought behind it. I think the Seattle Mariners, they've been to the postseason once in 23 years. I think it's criminal at this stage. It's such a great city and a great fan base. And the fact they've gone one time, 23 years, right. One of the most ridiculous things I've seen. I think they went into the break or into the trading deadline. They went out and got a Rosarena. They got Turner. They got Garcia from Toronto. I think they made really astute moves. I thought they were good. There were no big difference making free agents out there, as you know, came to find out. There was no Crochets moving. There was no Vladdy Juniors going. But I think with what was available, I think the Mariners did a really good job. That being said, 3 weeks later, they're not getting the job done. Those guys aren't particularly playing well. I think the fans in Seattle were really making a big stink. And I think management says, okay, we tried the trade deadline. It didn't work. We've been to the postseason once in 23 years. We got to do something drastic. And I think that was their second trading deadline, is we're going to show the fans that we really care. Instead of just going down the stretch, playing decent, and coming up short again, we're going to make some drastic shakeup. Who knows if this is going to work? Who knows if it's not going to work? So I'm not sitting here saying it's Scott Service's problem or he's the reason. I'm saying desperate times sometimes take desperate measures. And that's why it didn't surprise me when they did that.
Yeah, I see that. I definitely see that. There's no doubt about the shake up the mojo a little bit. And Seattle's, they're trending in the right direction. They're closing in, you know, of catching that wild card. You know, I'd say in Toronto, John Schneider, you know what I mean? I think there's a lot of expectations out there in Toronto. They've spent a lot of money and they just haven't gotten it done. especially, you know, this year, obviously being under 500, I'd say he'd be one of the guys. But when I go down the list of guys, Booney, you know, I don't know, Buddy Black out there in Colorado, maybe, you know, he's been there a while and they've struggled for a few years now, but I think everybody else is pretty safe. I mean, Bo Mel out there in San Fran, even though they're below 500, he's the right guy for that fit. Derek Shelton, they like here in Pittsburgh. David Bell could be on the hot seat. There's no doubt about that. I think out there, I think Marmol maybe in St. Louis, he's a guy, you know, they haven't been that great. You know, they haven't really gotten things going. He might be a guy that could be on the hot seat, but you know, Council's new in Chicago. Pat Murphy's done a great job. Skip Schumacher, I believe, is going to be a big free agent, you know, manager next year and a chance to go places. I think most managers besides those guys are pretty safe. You know, I really do. A.J. Hinch out there in Detroit has done a great job. The White Sox will have to decide if Grady Sizemore is the manager of the future or if they're going to go get somebody else. But I think everybody else is sitting pretty, you know, the teams like the guys that they have at the helm.
All right, last question. I'll let you get out of here. I'm going to give me two KC picks, two from the National League, two from the American League. If you've got – you've got four in your pool. Who are you taking? Who are the two teams that you potentially work making the World Series in the National, two in the American?
I think the Yankees. I love the Yankees this year. I really think this is the year they're going to win it. So the Yankees is probably the one team. And I think for some reason, I think Cleveland, man, I just like their bullpen. It's lights out. I mean, it's yes, literally it like they can shorten a game in a hurry. So if you get your starters, I almost feel like in those games, get your starters through four or five. And you could throw it to that pen. You know, I definitely like Cleveland. Obviously, you can't count out Houston, but you said to ask for two. So, and then the other ones, you know, I got to probably go with the favorites here. And no, you know what? I'm going to go with Philadelphia and Milwaukee. Okay. I like Milwaukee, dude. I think they've played well all year. They've been playing well for Pat Murphy. I like to see them do well. Obviously, the Dodgers loom. They're the Dodgers for a reason. I guess with the Dodgers, you have to say, if Jack Flaherty is your number one starter right now, do you have enough depth in that rotation to win the World Series? Obviously, Yamamoto's back and stuff, but, man, losing – they've had a lot of injuries this year in that rotation, so I just don't know what it's going to look like in the postseason.
You're right. And you talk about bullpens. Milwaukee's bullpen's one of those wipeout bullpens. You mentioned Cleveland. The San Diego Padres come to mind now with the trading deadline. That's a wipeout bullpen. But I agree with you on the Dodgers. It's, man, they're so good. And when Teoscar Hernandez is your fifth best offensive player, your offense is pretty good. But as we know, in the postseason, you need to have those stopper pitchers, and the Glasnows of the world just haven't been healthy. How healthy is Yamamoto going to be down the stretch? And can Flaherty, is he the guy at the top of their rotation? Stone's been hurt. Kershaw went down again. You're not going to have him. Just a lot of questions. Milwaukee, the scary teams for me are the teams that nobody's been paying attention. You know, we always pay attention to the Phillies, and they're a great team.
Right.
Their bullpen worries me a little bit. Dodgers, star power everywhere you look. But the Milwaukee Brewers of the world.
Yes.
The Mets sneaking in at the last minute of the world.
And that rotation with Manaea. Manaea in the last 7 weeks. Sean Manaea in the rotation with the Mets. He might be one of the best starters in the game. That's how elite he's gone. So you're facing the Mets now. You saw him go, you know, yesterday, seven innings, four hits. You got Manaea, you got Peterson, Severino's pitched well. So, like, they're good.
The Kansas City Royals are making noise. They could pitch. You got Witt, and you know what it's doing for me, Sean? The emergence of Bobby Witt being an MVP caliber player, I think it's putting the spotlight on a great, maybe unnoticed career in Salvador Perez over there in Kansas City.
Yeah, no, I agree, dude. Salvi, I mean, we now have to look at Salvi's, what he's doing this year, and look at his body of work, especially with a guy like Joe Mauer just going in as a first ballot Hall of Famer. You got to look at Salvi and go, he won a championship in 15. He's been around a long time. You know, he's closing in on 2,000 hits, you know, whatever, 300 some homers. This guy's body of work as one of the best catchers in this generation, we could be looking at Cooperstown.
Yep. All right, Sean Casey, I appreciate you coming on, man. Everybody out there, check him out on MLB Network and his podcast, The Mayor's Office. Where can they get it, Sean? I'm sure everybody knows, but tell them where they get The Mayor's Office.
Yeah, you can find The Mayor's Office podcast. We're on YouTube, and we're also on wherever you get your cast, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get it out there. But, Booney, dude, I just want to say I give you plugs as much as I can, too. Dude, you're doing an unbelievable job with this podcast. I feel like when I look at the guests on your podcast, I'm like, dude, this guy knows everybody because I know he's going out and doing it himself. So all those years growing up in those clubhouses with all those players, doing you well for the podcast now, dude. You do a great job, man. Love listening to it.
What do you think? Do you want to see Trump next week? Trump's coming on. No, I'm kidding.
I was like, you're the one guy I believe that you could actually get Trump.
Hey, don't put it past me. Don't put it past me.
I love it, dude.
We'll have him, dude. And then we'll have Kamala right after. All right.
Sean, I love it, dude. I appreciate
you coming on the show. For those of you that are watching the Brett Boone podcast, you can now also see it on YouTube. We've got our own channel. For those of you listening to the Boone podcast, the Odyssey app, or wherever you download your podcast. Until next time, keep it here.